Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Kehan. Today we'll discuss the article by Waz et al. Titled, A Call to Adopt a Fit-for-Purpose Approach to Antibody Validation for Flow Cytometry Analyses of Stem Cell Models and Beyond. This article was published October 23, 2019. Joining me today are Associate Editor Crystal Ripplinger, Deputy Editor Mary Lindsay, and Lead Author Rebecca Gundry. Let's get started.
In this perspective, Dr. Waz and Dr. Grundy propose an approach to antibody validation for flow cytometry assessment of stem cell-derived cardiomyocytes that takes into account its use. Rebecca, can you tell us why you wrote this piece?
Thank you, Karen and Crystal, for the opportunity to chat about our paper. This perspective article stems from one of the central missions of our lab, which is to develop and distribute reagents and methods that will facilitate the use of stem cell-derived cardiomyocytes in downstream research and translational applications. So towards this goal, our efforts generally focus on generating and validating new cell surface markers and antibodies for live cell immunophenotyping. And in doing so, it is critical that we are able to benchmark our new cell surface markers against the gold standard marker for identifying cardiomyocytes, which is troponin. However, in doing this research, we found that obtaining an accurate assessment of troponin positivity in our cultures was not so simple, and we found that when we used some published protocols, the results were not reliable. After discussing this with other colleagues that also use stem cell-derived cardiomyocytes in their work, we realized we were not alone in facing this challenge. Thus, we figured that if we took the time and effort to do this right, we could likely help other laboratories to implement reliable protocols that would enable them to accurately assess their cultures. Having published these observations in Stem Cell Reports and a follow-up protocol development guide in Current Protocols in Stem Cell Biology, we felt that a short perspective in AJP would help further raise awareness regarding how critical it is that researchers take the time to validate their antibodies and protocols for their specific applications, as these are important concepts that hold true far beyond the stem cell field.
Mary, what do you like about this call to action article?
With all the recent discussion on rigor and reproducibility, I really like that this article provides a nice summary of why it is important to standardize validation. We've talked recently in some other podcasts about providing the why to authors and researchers on helping them to understand the importance of increasing rigor and reproducibility. And so this article is right in line with that concept. As shown in the figure on the article, it really is striking the differences in results when sample preparation and antibody clone were varied. And so that's just an example that's very clear as to, you know, why it's important to be thinking about this.
Rebecca, why do you think attempts have not been made previously to standardize these immunophenotyping protocols?
Well, like any antibody application, it is context dependent. And so in other words, the specific details of a protocol for immunophenotyping one cell type using one marker will likely vary from those details that are required for another marker or cell type. However, based on our literature review, it seems that perhaps the impact of some of the experimental details are not well recognized. Hence, researchers may just not be aware that different fixation reagents, for example, may dramatically affect the specificity of an antibody within a particular application. And in our experience, we find that nonspecific binding of an antibody may only be revealed if the conditions are tested on both positive and negative cell type controls. Overall, you can imagine that if the proper controls aren't in place and used routinely during method validation, researchers may not be alerted to the problems. Hence, there may be an underappreciation regarding how the results are affected by the technical details, which likely results in fewer efforts to fully validate a given protocol.
Mary, the lack of available experimental detail has been identified as a major cause of lack of reproducibility. What are your thoughts on this?
I totally agree. In our own lab, even when we think we have a very well-written and very complete and very clear standard operating procedure, new folks joining the team show us where details are lacking or unclear. And that's with the SOP, which is very comprehensive. When it's time to write the manuscript and word count is an issue, protocols are abbreviated even more. And so I can totally see where lack of detail is an issue.
Rebecca, in flow cytometry, is antibody validation the hardest technical aspect?
In a sense, yes. But remember that we cannot validate an antibody independent of the sample preparation conditions. So the challenge, I think, comes in when we realize the number of experimental variables that need to be considered, and then testing all of them in combination against positive and negative control cell types. In our experience, we see that isotype controls are used routinely in literature. However, negative control cell types are rarely mentioned. And it is not entirely clear to us if that is because they are not being used during validation or just not being mentioned in the publications. However, we do suspect that in many cases, they're not actually being used in validation because when we have tested some of the experimental conditions that have appeared in published literature, they appear to work if we only consider comparisons of the antibody to isotype control. However, the lack of specificity is immediately apparent when we include a comparison to negative cell type controls.
This really highlights the necessity to do a full set of controls, including the negatives.
So in this piece, Rebecca calls for a change in terminology from validation to fit for purpose. Mary, what do you think of this change?
I like it. Fit for purpose encapsulates the concept that validation is not a one-size-fit-all process.
I agree. We believe that the term fit for purpose is so fitting for exactly that reason. We think it emphasizes the importance of moving away from the tendency to assume that results from the use of an antibody in one context are predictive of its utility in another context.
Rebecca, you developed a standard operating procedure for assessing cardiomyocyte identity within stem cell cultures. What was the goal here?
Well, we wanted to share our experiences and provide stepwise instructions for other investigators to facilitate accurate characterization of their cells and reporting of experimental conditions in a way that can be replicated among labs. It is true that validating a fit-for-purpose protocol takes considerable time and effort, and so if other laboratories can start with our protocol and verify that it works in their own hands, we think this will really accelerate the impact of research that uses stem cell derivatives, as it will help ensure that results from one laboratory will be able to be replicated among other groups.
Rebecca, the mixed population experiment is a great way to assess antibody specificity. For the specified dynamic range, how do you determine and know that you are within limits?
Great question. So the mixed population experiment is the ultimate test of suitability for assessing population heterogeneity by testing capacity of the antibody and protocol to discriminate between positive and negative cells within the same experimental sample. And this experiment should be performed after an antibody has been screened, titrated, and its specificity has been verified. And during those steps, the specific dynamic range can be assessed. For the mixed population experiment, our approach is to do the full range of 0 to 100% for the ratio of positive to negative cell types. We recommend performing this experiment with at least 5 different percentage points within that range, and then the percent positivity measured for each mixed population sample should be compared to the expected positivity, and the histogram for the mixed population should be bimodal, and the relative locations of the positive and negative populations should remain stable across the different samples.
Mary, one of the take-home messages is that while companies should test the antibodies that they sell, investigators need to do due diligence to confirm specificity. What do you think?
Yeah, trust but verify, right? This is exactly why the NIH has added the authentication document to grant applications.
Even the best performing antibody, if not used correctly or in the context in which it was validated, can still yield incorrect results. Hence, it really is up to the investigator to ensure that the antibody and all experimental conditions that are being used are validated for their specific experimental context.
And this concept bridges past antibody use. I think this can be said for a lot of reagent use.
Rebecca, are there plans to develop a consensus statement on standardized comprehensive reporting requirements for flow cytometry studies?
Well, the MyFlowCyte guidelines published in 2008 are already very comprehensive. So I think the best thing that we can keep doing is to thoroughly validate our reagents and conditions, make those data available, and continue to emphasize the importance of using a validated fit-for-purpose protocol for any antibody work that we perform. And personally, I am hopeful that journals will begin to require a minimum level of information and validation to consider a manuscript for publication in a similar way to what is being required for proteomics data, for example. What goes along with that, however, is the need to accommodate the large amount of data that is associated with these validation efforts. And we have found that not only are there word limits in the main text, as pointed out earlier by Dr. Lindsay, but some journals limit the amount of supplemental material. So going forward, we are hopeful that as publishers respond to the recent calls by numerous groups to increase rigor in research, including the NIH, that journals will adopt mechanisms to accommodate the large amount of information and data that goes along with proper validation and reporting.
And there's also attempts being made to have storage places available where common protocols can be stored and linked so that as you're writing methods, you could say, we used the standard operating procedure and then provide the link for that. That's another way to help the publishers with the word limit count.
Mary, Rebecca, it was so great to get both of your perspectives on this. On behalf of AJP Heart, thank you so much, Rebecca, for writing this perspective, and thank you both for participating in this podcast. Carol, I'll send it back to you.
You've been listening to an AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology podcast. For more podcasts like this one, visit us online at physiology.org/journal/AJP Heart.